You could say they hold a doctorate in charm offensive, but flattery and friendliness can only go so far. There's a whole lot of skill in diplomacy that's folded into the secret sauce of a White House social secretary. And now two former social secretaries from the Bush and Obama administrations are out with a new book that provides some concrete advice to artfully maneuver through the social situations we're involved in. You're listening to The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. The book is Treating People Well, The Extraordinary Power of Civility at Work and in Life. Lee Berman served as White House Social Secretary and Special Assistant to President Bush from 2004 to 2007. Lee, welcome to the program.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be here.
And Jeremy Bernard served as Social Secretary and Special Assistant to President Obama from 2011 to 2015. Jeremy, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Well, of course, good morning. Of course, you know, there doesn't seem like a trajectory in college that goes immediately to a degree to become a social secretary. Lee, I want to start with you because I was chuckling. Your entree, your foot in the door was a part-time job, and you thought, well, you know, what could be so bad? My daughter's school is right around the corner. But you know, anyone who thinks White House could never even imagine anything part-time about it. Lee, go ahead.
Well, I had been a full-time mother for 10 years when a friend of mine said, you really should go work for Mrs. Cheney as the social secretary because it's a half-time job. It's around the corner from your daughter's school. You could pick them up at the end of the day. It would be so easy. And I interviewed with Mrs. Cheney, and she hired me, and then I found that managing the House and being the social secretary for the vice president was quite a lot more than a full-time job, but it was the kind of thing that pushed me out into the world and turned out to be a great opportunity and a wonderful experience for me.
Jeremy, what was your trajectory like to become social secretary?
It's an interesting question because when people would say to me, interns, or if I was talking to a group of students, they'd say, how do I become social secretary? And I said, well, I really don't know because it came about in such an unexpected way. I had worked in the campaign from the very beginning, so I got to know the Obamas before anyone thought there was a chance that Barack Obama could win. And I started in, as the campaign was running down and it looked like he might win, people started asking me, well, what do you want to do? And I said, and I was originally not going to go into the administration. And someone said, you should serve in this historic administration at least 2 years just to say you've done it and to feel like you were a part of it. So I started as a White House liaison for the National Endowment to the Humanities. It is each agency has a White House liaison person. So it was my first job, and then I ended up going to Paris to work for the ambassador in France, U.S. ambassador in France. And when I was there, I got an email saying, "Would I throw my hat in the ring for social secretary?" And I thought, "There's no way I'd get the job of social secretary." But I was like, "I'm not going to not try it," and went and interviewed, and one of the first things I said to Mrs. Obama in my meeting with her was, I'm not certain I'm the right person. I really don't know flowers, and I don't know China. I don't know that I'm the right fit. And she said, oh, no, you'll have people that will help you on that. I need someone that knows how to handle political things, and not mean political Democrat and Republican, but how to handle political situations that are in any job, and someone with a better sense of how to get people, more and more people, into the White House.
Lee, flowers in China, that is, though, what comes to mind when we think perhaps of these lavish meals and state dinners. And there is pictures of you in the book arranging flowers, but you learned lots more life lessons around organizing these very very high stakes dinners and events. Is that right?
That's true. You know, there's so much more to being a social secretary than those things. It's about managing and working with many different kinds of people from different backgrounds, just working with all the various members of the White House residence staff who are permanent employees, the people who are electricians and butlers and ushers and florists, calligraphers. And so it's a constant management job to keep everyone working together so that each event comes off very smoothly. And it's we learn from dealing with so many different people, in addition to the thousands of guests who come to the White House all throughout the year, how to be more successful at getting along with people, which was the reason that we thought we should write the book and share it with others, because it's really a series of life hacks for those awkward and difficult moments that we all experience in our lives.
The book is Treating People Well. Lee Berman, Jeremy Bernard, stay with us. They were social secretaries and special assistants to the president for the Bush and Obama administrations, respectively. You can join in this conversation, 800-642-1234. You might have a thorny etiquette question. Are you trying to resolve a work conflict in a different way? Maybe in the new year, you're trying to be more organized in a specific part of your life. Brief us on your social perplexities, 800-642-1234. You can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Some of these scenarios and these bullet point kind of things to think about in your mind as we approach these situations. There's one situation I know a lot of people can really identify with, is entering a room full of strangers, and how do you start making conversation and entering and exiting conversation. And Lee, I would like to start with you. There is that scenario that we deal with. What are some tips?
Well, it can be a very intimidating thing to stand there at the doorway to a room of strangers and find a way in. But the first thing I would suggest is you scan the room and you look for a small group of people who are chatting comfortably. If you see people in tight little knots talking very earnestly, they're in the middle of something and it's going to be more difficult to approach them and to make your way into a conversation. So I find people who look fairly casual in their conversation. I try to think of the context of the event. Say you're at a work event and this is a little reception before a luncheon, and you've just heard a speech. The easiest thing to say is to walk up to this group and say, hey, wasn't that an amazing speech, or wasn't that speaker a fascinating man? It doesn't have to be brilliant. It's just an opening. And from there, people will acknowledge you. They'll look you in the eye, shake hands, as you should do. And you can begin from there to get to know people a little bit. It's important to try to remember at least their first name, because it shows that you care and you actually want to make the connection. And then the other thing I would say is don't feel bad if when you do that, people don't respond, because not everybody knows how to have those kinds of interactions. They're just uncomfortable, and they may stand there and stare at you like you have two heads. Don't take it personally. Just go find another group and start again. And you can get around a room pretty quickly and pretty easily just making those kinds of moves. And don't feel like you have to stay and talk to one person because you don't understand how to break off the conversation. You can just very easily say, this has been so pleasant meeting you. I hope I see you again sometime, and move off.
Marcia from St. Croix sent an email, said, please share information with us about how to handle introductions, especially when there are several people to introduce. Jeremy?
Well, it's a great question. And often the best thing is to try to find something that they may have in common. You can introduce someone and say, Steve here, just joined the State Department, or just moved to D.C., or whatever, and try to make it almost like it was a conversation you'd be having with them one-on-one, and they may have nothing in common, or they may have a lot in common. You'll have no idea until you start kind of bringing them together, and sometimes it means you have to do the most of the talking. Hey, I met Tom 3 years ago, we became good friends, and we know the host from such and such situation. How did you get to know the host, and what's your connection? And
finding
some common ground and make it a little less of a chore than we feel it has to be. Both Lee and I, I've got to say, we're really shy kids. We were not born to go out and have the job of social secretary, sir.
Inside the White House, every moment is high stakes and high visibility. We're learning how kindness, empathy, and thoughtfulness, just being genuine, can go a long way in managing our day-to-day social situations. The book is Treating People Well. Lee Berman and Jeremy Bernard stay with us. You can join in the conversation. Questions about social situations, 800-642-1234. We're learning lessons from the Oval Office and applying them to everyday life on this hour of the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You might call it a guide to modern manners. The new book is titled Treating People Well. The former social secretaries for Presidents Bush and Obama stay with us. Lee Berman and Jeremy Bernard gathering your questions on how to perform well in tough social situations. They'll take a crack at it, 800-642-1234. What do you want to know about making White House functions run smoothly? What challenges have you encountered as you try to work a room full of strangers? Or what about impromptu speaking in front of an audience? Or maybe you need fresh insights on a frustrating work relationship. 800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Lee, I want to go back to you and ask how, with so many functions at the White House, how in our work can we be more organized?
Well, I think the thing that helped me the most was to plan ahead and to visualize everything that I was going to need to do so that I would be less likely to forget things. And because there are events at the White House every day and often multiple events, we were working on what was happening that day and thinking about tomorrow and next week and next month and maybe 4 or 5 months down the road for a state dinner. So there was a lot of things that were happening simultaneously. And the only way that we could keep track of it all was to keep very good records of each event and everything that went into them. We had basically a to-do list for every event, and we filled them in. We sent them around to everyone who had some involvement in it. For example, if you want to have a reception in the White House, you always have to have the White House usher's office involved to make sure that there are seats set up and a stage, and we need to speak with the greens people and make sure that there are nice plants around the stage. There are a lot of little details. So being able to sit and just think through, it might look like you're daydreaming, but just sit and think through how you want the event to go, every element of it, whether it's a big job you're doing at work or a school project, write everything down and then assign a timeline to it. It can make it very easy to get it under control and feel like you're on top of it, and feeling confident about it is a big part of it being successful.
So a lot of visualization here, also a lot of seeing each step in the phase, each phase in the step. Jeremy, go ahead. How about you? How do you stay organized at work?
One of the things I did that was because it can be overwhelming, as any job is, I would sometimes actually, before an event, take about 5 minutes to ask my assistant, unless it's an absolute emergency, not to come in. And I'd actually meditate, just have some quiet time to calm down, because sometimes after that, you need that relaxation so that you can think a little clearer and move forward without so much stress. And the other thing we did is every morning I had a staff meeting where we talked about the events of the previous day. We talked about what went right and what went wrong, where we saw problems, and what we can do for the next time to make sure it doesn't happen.
staying calm is that important lesson you offer there. But you mentioned that most people react to a crisis in a fight or flight response. Why is it so important, Lee, to keep your cool?
It's important to keep a situation from becoming inflamed. So no matter how you may feel on the inside, you have to hide that and put on a game face. Take a moment to really think about what your options are. And when you're in the middle of a crisis, we found that, you know, worrying about assigning blame and how did this happen is a complete waste of time. The object is to fix whatever is going wrong quickly. And so we tried to be very calm and undramatic. We avoided people who were maybe having a very emotional meltdown, and we don't respond to that, and we didn't get into the emotion of it because that sort of thing feeds on itself and makes the situation feel more out of control. And then finally, we try when all is said and done to have some perspective about it. You know, we so often get ourselves so worried about something that's gone wrong, and then we can't let it go after the fact. And we learned that you have to learn to let things go, put it in perspective, and say, you know, I'll do better tomorrow.
There's a chapter in the book titled Honesty is the Best Policy, Except When It Isn't. Jeremy, break this down for us. When is honesty not the best policy?
It's a great question. Sometimes too much information isn't necessary and actually can be hurtful. If someone you know isn't invited to a dinner or a party or something that that is a friend that you have in common with someone else, there's no point in saying, "Hey, I thought you weren't invited to that party. You know, he had a party last night. Why weren't you there?" Or that someone wasn't included in something. Sometimes it's really not necessary to be too honest. Or if someone didn't get a job for a certain reason and there's no reason to tell them, oh, you know, we didn't think your maturity was up to level. Sometimes you just say something like it wasn't the right match. So it's always good to be honest, except when it isn't, and that is when it's hurtful and it does no good. There's no benefit of it, because sometimes people that like to stir the pot, they will say things and they say, "Oh, well, I just wanted to be honest." Always a red flag there, because it is a way of stirring the pot, and they use the excuse of honesty for doing it. So,
but you have to be pretty self-aware and sensitive to even determine when to share and when to shelter the truth.
Absolutely. But you know, one of the things we had to deal with at the White House was for various parties, and people would get upset that they weren't invited to different parties, and you know, it was a relative to, compared to what it looks like on TV. It's a relatively limited space, and trying to get as many people there as possible meant that you couldn't have constant repeat people. You had to bring in new people constantly, and so you know, it was important not to brag too much about what events were going on, or someone saying, "Oh, I was at this event. Why weren't you there?" It's just a matter of being sensitive and aware of other people's feelings and how you would feel if you felt left out of something.
We're talking about the book Treating People Well. The former White House social secretaries are with us, Lee Berman and Jeremy Bernard. Lee Berman during the Bush administration and Jeremy during the Obama administration. Gathering your questions about sensitive social situations, dilemmas that you run into in your everyday life. 800-642-1234. Maybe you want to know more about how to be organized or how to approach a thank you note in just the right way, the just the right touch. 800-642-1234. Tweet us with your questions at WPR Mornings. Loyalty, Lee, seems to me the hallmark of working in the White House, that I don't know whether it's a loyalty pledge, but something in the DNA knows that you're going to be loyal to the president and the first lady and really not air their business whatsoever. What in our lives can we take away from that in terms of loyalty?
Well, you know, the White House resident staff is amazingly discreet, and they work there throughout the course of their lives often. They are not political people who go in and out with the presidents. They stay throughout their careers, and oftentimes generations of the same family will continue to work in the White House, and they have an admirable sense of discretion. And it gives the people they work for, namely the first family, the ability to relax and feel safe and in a kind of a sanctuary there when they actually live in a world that is so public. And I think in our private lives, knowing that we have friends around us who are discreet and who keep their word, who support us unconditionally, and from whom we receive loyalty, but also people to whom we give loyalty, all of those things add up to a loyal person. And a person who's loyal is someone who you trust and respect. So it's a valuable element of character.
Jeremy, your thoughts on loyalty?
You know, I think it's often underestimated, yet it is one of the most important things that you feel. When you know that your close friends and you know they're loyal to you and that they are true to you, you are more and more apt to be loyal to them. So it is a kind of a two-way street, but it really builds on itself. I think one of the reasons you were asking about how we got the jobs, I think one of the reasons we got the jobs, the Obamas knew I was loyal. I had started from the very beginning of the campaign. They had gotten to know me, and they knew I was a loyal person, and they were loyal to me. It didn't mean we didn't have to continue to work. I couldn't let my guard down and be lazy at the job because I'd be like, well, they're loyal to me. They'll take care of me. You still had to earn your position, but it was they didn't worry that I had a different agenda. And that's how it is with friendships. It's how it is with working relationships. And it's really important.
And you brought a lot of humor and charm to that work relationship. So many pictures in the book, too, of whether it's, you know, dancing on your last day or just these jokes that come up in the book. I mean, how does humor and charm work into relationships like this?
Well, you know, humor is a great relaxer and an easer of tension. And there were many times, especially at the White House, where it's kind of a high-stakes situation every day, but, you know, every working environment is political in some sense, and there are times when things are uncomfortable or awkward or people are disagreeing, and the person who can find that moment and say something funny and get a laugh, it's like taking the air out of a balloon, and everyone relaxes, and it puts the people who are in that situation in a mindset of let's revisit this and let's start again and trying to find a solution from there. So humor can be very powerful, and it also shows that you have enough confidence to make a joke. You know, not everybody would feel comfortable about telling their boss a joke. And if you've reached that point of self-confidence, you know, that's a great thing. You just have to make sure that the moment you're choosing and the joke you're choosing is appropriate for that particular person.
And Jeremy, you can even make Jimmy Fallon crack up.
Yeah, there was an event. It was when Jimmy Fallon had his previous show that was, I believe, after the Tonight Show. And he was there for one of the initiatives of Mrs. Obama about eating healthy and being healthy. And he was preparing, as we were preparing for things in the lower, not the state floor, the floor below it, we had a small little buffet set up, and it was fairly basic. The White House, one of the things the White House has in common with most people is very limited budget. There's not an endless supply of funds. So Jimmy Fallon looked in and he saw, you know, some apples and bottled water and maybe one or two other things. And he looked, he goes, "Oh, kind of sparse, isn't it?" And I said, "Yeah, well, you know, we do a much better layout for when Leno's here." And there was this dead pause, and then he started laughing, realizing I was joking around. I learned from my parents that they have great senses of humor. My dad had a really good sense of humor and knew how to use it when things were difficult or when there was an uncomfortable situation to try to lessen, not to gloss over, but to lessen the intensity so that we could come to a resolution easier.
But you also have to have the confidence to be able to speak up and say it. How do you build confidence?
You know, confidence is really the basis for everything when it comes to treating people well. It's helpful to start with a positive attitude, to be upbeat and likable and non-threatening, because it makes others want to respond with the same good humor. And another way to build confidence is to be prepared. I mean, my first day at the White House, I was very intimidated. Everything from the parking space they gave me, which was right outside the door, to going through all of the security and things, made me feel like I really didn't belong there and there'd been some kind of karmic mistake. But when I got in there and I started talking to everyone, meeting as many people as I could, understanding the job, preparing myself for what was to come, it made me feel better about what we were all doing there. And finally, it's important to get and receive reassurance. I mean, Mrs. Bush was extraordinarily reassuring and kind and would do things that would show to the staff that she had trust in me. For example, the tradition was that the First Lady would approve all of the menus, and after I'd been there a few weeks, I went over to the butler's office to pick up the menus, and the head usher said to me, "You know, Mrs. Bush said you're going to be choosing these menus from now on." And she hadn't even mentioned it to me, but that kind of got around, and people realized that she had faith in me to do this. And frankly, she was very, very busy with other things anyway. And it built such loyalty for me to know that she trusted me that way. It was very reassuring.
You also mentioned how planning it in advance, even setting out your clothes the night before, making sure they're ironed, fitting into how other people dress at work. How does that play into it, Lee?
I know that sounds like a very small thing, but when you're seeking confidence, and I have traditionally not been a confident person, if I can eliminate anything that I'm nervous about, I will do that. So if I don't have to worry about my clothes that morning, and if I know that they're comfortable and they're appropriate, that's one other thing that's just off the table. And so I always, and I still do this, I take out what I'm going to wear the night before, and it just saves you rushing around in the morning, and it starts to throw you off a little if you find that the outfit you plan to wear is actually at the dry cleaners or you never did wash it. And so the littlest things that allow you to feel confident are worth the effort.
We are learning about how to be our best with whatever life throws our way in the new book, Treating People Well, former Bush and Obama social secretaries Lee Berman and Jeremy Bernard. Stay with us. Your questions on civility, on modern manners, and on managing White House functions at 800-642-1234. You can send your question via email to ideas@WPR.org. Tweet us at WPR Mornings. We'll be back to the conversation after a check of the latest news. It's not all punchbowl placement and flower arrangement. The White House Social Secretary is a high-stakes job with loads of takeaways. We're getting the benefit of those takeaways this hour of the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The job, you're hosting thousands of people every year. They're coming from all over the world. You run the risk of insulting a world leader with even a casual misstep. And by the way, no pressure. Your bosses happen to be the president and first lady. The book is Treating People Well, The Extraordinary Power of Civility at Work and in Life. Lee Berman and Jeremy Bernards are with us. They served as social secretaries to the Bush and Obama White Houses, respectively. Your tough etiquette questions are welcome at 800-642-1234. Do you wonder how to respond on social media when a friend goes off the rails? What about a colleague whom you can't see eye to eye with? Is civility something you want to work on in the new year? In what way? 800-642-1234. You can also email us at ideas@wpr.org. Lee, let's go to this world of social media where people expect us to respond immediately. We see a lot of nasty posts out there. How should we approach social media and how we respond?
Well, you know, the internet is kind of like Rome after the Visigoths took over. There's total chaos. Everything is new. There are constantly new apps and ways of using the internet coming forward, and it's largely anonymous if you want it to be, which is kind of a prescription for where we are now in terms of people behaving very badly and not treating each other well online. And I think the rule of thumb is to remember that there is a human being at the other end of that computer who, or maybe hundreds, thousands, who are reading what you are writing, and they are affected by it. And so it's very important to try not to be hurtful. It's important to be professional and businesslike and to separate what might be your personal email profiles and internet profiles from your business profiles. Because it's happening more and more these days that people are applying for jobs, and when the HR people go online and look at their Facebook, they find that they're just not the kind of person that they want in their company. So it has an impact on your professional success.
But Jeremy, that tweet can be so quick and so easy.
Which is part of the problem. I think what you really have to focus on and understand is what you put on the internet is, in a sense, there forever. And so think twice, because you don't want something to come back and hurt you in the past or embarrass you. And sometimes when we react quickly and in a sense of with a lot of emotion, it's not the way we want to portray ourselves. And Lee mentioned something about things that can hurt you in the future. I can't tell you how many people apply for jobs or internships that we thought were perfect, but then we saw things on Facebook that they wrote that were offensive or troublesome, and they didn't get vetted because it was not acceptable. So anything you do or write is there. It's there for history. Sometimes you can get certain things erased or moved off, but overall, what you put on the internet is there as part of your fingerprint, and you've just got to keep that in mind. And we've all done it. I think back to some things. Why on earth would I send emails like that, or why did I get upset and show it in a text? You just got to be careful and understand that this represents you, and it's like writing something up and putting it on a billboard. They used to tell us at the White House that we all had to take ethics training, and they said never write something in an email that you wouldn't want to see in the Washington Post. Mm. And it really is a good motto, because you have to really think, is this going to come back that could embarrass me and or, more importantly, the president and first lady?
And Lee, you put the person you're sending the email to, you put it in last? You enter it into the field last? Is that right?
Yes, I think that's a good idea. When you're writing an email and it's taking some time and some thought and you want to organize it all, it's best not to put the person to whom you're sending it into the to line until you're completely finished, you're comfortable with it, you know it's fine and it's ready to go. Because, you know, it's very easy to sometimes just hit send
before you're ready, and then you have to go back and sort of undo. And generally speaking, I think treating everyone in as businesslike and pleasant a manner via emails is worth doing, because they're just as when we're face-to-face with each other, they're judging you on how you're treating them. And when you treat people with kindness, they are more likely to respond with kindness.
Lee, what are some good tips for being on the job in the first days? What should you think about as you go into a new job?
Well, I think it's important to meet as many of the people who work there as possible and establish yourself as someone who's there and who's willing to learn and eager to be a positive force within the office. I had actually wonderful learning experience in this from a man who was much younger than I. He was President Bush's personal aide, and he just had a tremendous sense of humanity, and his name is Blake Gottesman, and he was so kind to people, and he would ask questions in a very gentle way so that they didn't feel threatened or challenged. He would make people feel welcome, and he was very, very patient. And so I think that when you're first beginning, people are reading you and deciding if they're going to like you or not, and it can be really useful to make the extra effort there. And I would also say that going to people who had your job before and asking for advice is a really good idea, because they could save you from making mistakes that they've already made. And usually people really like to be asked for advice, and they will bend over backwards to give it to you.
Jeremy, any follow-up on that? Your first days on the job, first days, first impressions?
Yeah, one of the things I did is I knew I was, you obviously in any new job are nervous, and as I was walking through those gates of the White House and wondering, you know, when are they going to find out the mistake they made? This was all, how did this happen? I knew that I didn't want to show my insecurity, so I played the part and was very confident, and made sure that I, whether it was the Secret Service agent at his post or the gardener or whoever I walked, housekeeper, whoever I walked past, looked at and acknowledged and said something to. And so it really made me feel welcomed, because it in response, I got a good welcome from them. So it's really, and then the other thing is I really relied on my predecessors, and which is how Lee and I became friends. I relied on people that had the job, going back to the Kennedy administration, and we developed a good bond. And what was amazing was how many things we found in common, issues that came up, problems that happened. And it didn't matter how different the administrations were or how different the parties were, that we often found that our troubles or our obstacles were the same.
A lot of the skills we're learning this hour, they flow from listening to one another. How can we become more effective listeners?
I think it's important to try to be empathetic and patient with people. You know, we move through life so fast now, and we listen less and less. So it's very hard to communicate if you're not really paying attention. And often when people are trying to tell you something, they're not just coming out and saying exactly what they mean. They're working around to what they want to tell you, and you have to read between the lines and try to understand exactly what it is that they're saying. People refer to this as funneling. For example, if you have an employee who is absentee a lot, they're really becoming a problem. So when you call them in to talk to them about it, it's better not to start the conversation by saying, how come you're late all the time, or how come you've been missing so many days? I'm really annoyed about this. It's easier to say, so how is your family? Is everything well, everyone well? And sort of generally and politely check their general circumstances. You may find that there's someone in the family who's been really ill, or that they're having some other extreme difficulty that is affecting their absenteeism that will make you much more understanding in how you deal with the problem. And so it's this kind of careful listening that helps us to get along better with people and to, you know, give them the benefit of the doubt before we attack.
Jeremy, what do great listeners have in common?
You know, the important thing about really listening is how much you learn. It is in this time where people want immediate responses and everything is happening much quicker. Technology has given us a lot of benefits. We get information faster. It's easier to get. But the problem can be is that it's tougher to listen and to take the time not just to hear what's being said, but think about it. And it's amazing how much if you sit and talk to someone and really listen, you are able to absorb and learn. It's about being in the now, focusing on what's in front of you, and listening to the person or persons that you're in communication with. You'll learn a lot more, and the relationships will build much better.
Well, Lee and Jeremy, thank you both so much for joining us.
Oh, our pleasure.
This has been a joy. Thank you so much.
Lee Berman served as Social Secretary and Special Assistant to President George W. Bush from 2004 to 2007. Jeremy Bernard served as Social Secretary and Special Assistant to President Obama from 2011 to 2015. Their new book is titled Treating People Well, The Extraordinary Power of Civility at Work and in Life. This Hour of the Morning Show was produced by Nyasia Ellison. Michelle Johnson is executive producer. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This conversation on civility, you find it on the Ideas Network. Stay with us.